Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, I'm not homeless, but I got a golden voice, don't I? Really? Don't you think? Hey, smooth jazz coming at you right now. Yet Jimmy Fallon doesn't call me. Now, I know, I'm not homeless, but I'm from the home of the... So, ladies and gentlemen, from New Orleans, Louisiana, and it feels so good to be back here for a number of reasons, maybe the least important of which is back in the United States of America, where you can have your headphones as loud as you want them at the radio station. You know, there's no health and safety limit on, oh, we don't want you to get deaf now, do we? So, it sounds good to me. I don't know about you. I'm liking what I'm hearing. Catching up on a couple things from the holiday season. The United States Army Corps of Engineers is perhaps facing a lawsuit by the officials of Bald Head Island, North Carolina, for damage they believe resulted from the Corps' dredging done in 2000, followed by other projects, caused erosion and damaged the island's infrastructure, say officials. They also think it has damaged the island's ecosystem. Aside from that, the island's in very good shape. Just infrastructure and ecosystem. Their years of trying to negotiate with the Army Corps for help in mitigating the catastrophic effects of maintenance, dredging, and management of the Wilmington Harbor Navigational Channel were unavailing, apparently. The channel is uncomfortably close to Bald Head Island. The village passed a resolution authorizing the filing of a lawsuit. The resolution asserts the 2000 realignment of the shipping channel and subsequent maintenance, dredging, and management caused severe erosion, resulting in damage to village roads, infrastructure, property, and tax base. Don't you know? The resolution also spells out environmental damage in the form of threats to the habitats of endangered and threatened species, including loggerhead, leatherback, Kemp's Ridley, and green sea turtles, piping plover and Wilson's plover seabirds, and sea beach amaranth. Also, species harmed by the Corps' failure to address the problem. Village officials expect negotiations with the Corps to continue this year, despite the suit. And those will be good negotiations, because the Corps, they may not know how to build things, but they do know how to negotiate. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. The Archdiocese of Milwaukee has directed its attorneys to file for bankruptcy protection. Yes. Because pending sexual abuse lawsuits in Milwaukee have left it with debts it can't pay. Just interrupting that for a moment to share a lovely moment. I don't think I shared this with you last week. I don't think I did. If it's a repeat, enjoy. It sounds good in here. The British family with which I'm entwined maritally, we'd all decided on Christmas Eve to go around the corner from where we live to the neighborhood Catholic church, St. Francis of Assisi, or as I call him, Frankie Animals, that's his gangland name, for carols. You know, we figured we could sneak out before the Mass. That's hard sneaking. They don't take a break. I guess they saw us coming. Anyway, so early in the carol sing, the priest... Lovely, fine, upstanding Irish gentleman brings up a young boy, about 11-year-old lad, to sing in those beautiful choir boy tones a couple of carols. And when the lad had concluded, these were the priest's words to the crowd. Doesn't he get a little clap? Back to the story, the Roman Catholic Archdiocese in Milwaukee is entering Chapter 11 reorganization so it can continue its work as a church while also compensating victims of sexual abuse, according to the Archbishop. The cases in Milwaukee include allegations that one priest sexually abused about 200 boys at a suburban school for deaf students. You remember that song from last year. From 1950 to 1974. The song almost made me bankrupt. What are you doing? The Archdiocese had been in mediation with some purported victims. Purported? This is the LA Times. But that stalled last month after the men said they wanted church documents and other agreements released along with the money. The Archdiocese spokesman says the failed negotiation means the church will probably face lawsuits involving large legal fees. The bankruptcy reorganization is the best way to ensure the church could meet its financial obligations. The abuse cases have already cost the Archdiocese more than $29 million, almost 200 claims over the last 20 years. The Archdiocese is the eighth in the United States to seek bankruptcy protection since 2002, and when the abuse scandal erupted, the others, Fairbanks, Alaska, Portland, Oregon, San Diego, California, Spokane, Washington, Tucson, Wilmington, Delaware, and Davenport, Iowa. The city's so nice, they named it after a sofa. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. And this is your brain on the war on drugs, or annals of political courage. I don't know what really classification this story goes under, but it's a clarification by the Associated Press is what it really is. In a December 26th story, the Associated Press reported that the United States is studying drug reforms in Portugal and that White House drug czar Gil Kerkolowski visited Portugal to learn about its experience with decriminalizing drugs. The Associated Press now adds this. The story should have made clear that Kerkolowski does not think Portugal's approach is right for the United States. Okay, I'm going over there to study it, but I don't agree with what I'm studying. Hello, welcome to the show. the motto for weekly radio, ladies and gentlemen. Get it right next time. From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of Le Show. And now, news from outside the bubble. Continuing to point out that there have been newsworthy things made public in the WikiLeaks disclosures. And by the way, there's a great rundown of a lot of other newsworthy items from WikiLeaks at cbsnews.com, of all places. Somebody should tell Katie. Anyway, from the Miami Herald, 3 months into Barack Obama's presidency, the administration, under pressure to do something about alleged abuses in Bush-era interrogation policies, turned to a Florida senator to deliver a sensitive message to Spain. Don't indict former President Bush's legal brain trust for alleged torture in the treatment of detainees. So warned Mel Martinez on one of his frequent trips to Madrid. Doing so would chill U.S.-Spanish relations. A senior Spanish diplomat gave the former GOP chairman a lesson in Spain's separation of powers. The independence of the judiciary and the process must be respected, said acting Foreign Minister Ángel Lozada. He reiterated to Martinez that the executive branch of government could not close any judicial investigation and urged that this case not affect the overall relationship. The case is still open on the desk of a Spanish magistrate, awaiting a reply from the Obama administration on whether it'll pursue a probe of its own. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. A probe of his own. That's me holding my breath. The episode, revealed in a raft of WikiLeaks cables, was part of a secret, concerted U.S. effort to stop a crusading Spanish judge from investigating the torture complaint against former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez and five other senior Bush lawyers. It reveals a covert troubleshooting role played by Martinez, now a banker. How does that happen? He will not discuss the case. Also, top U.S. diplomatic cables show Japanese and American officials discussing taking action against a prominent anti-whaling group. Huh? Cables dated January 1st, I believe, of last year. They revealed the U.S. representative to the International Whaling Commission, Monica Medina, discussed revoking the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's tax-exempt status during a November 2009 meeting with senior Japanese officials. They showed the Japanese officials complaining the American-based group's actions were making whaling a political issue and hurting any chance of a compromise on the number of whales killed each year. The U.S. approached Japan in late 2009 to reach a deal on whaling, calling it an irritant in international relations. The founder of Sea Shepherd wants a complete halt to Japanese whaling in Antarctica. Their vessels are currently trying to interrupt Japan's hunt, which kills up to 1,000 whales a year. And, from The Guardian, the U.S. Embassy in Paris advised Washington to start a military-style trade war against any European Union country which opposed genetically modified crops, newly released WikiLeaks cables show. In response to moves by France to ban a Monsanto genetically modified corn variety, in late 2007, the ambassador Craig Stapleton, a friend and business partner of former U.S. President Bush, asked Washington to penalize the EU and particularly countries which did not support the use of genetically modified crops. The list of target retaliation should be measured rather than vicious, he advised, and must be sustainable over the long term, since we should not expect an early victory. Moving to retaliation will make it clear that the current path has real costs to EU interests and could help strengthen European pro-biotech voices. Stapleton, with Bush, co-authored the Texas Rangers baseball team in the 1990s. In other cables, U.S. diplomats around the world are found to have pushed genetically modified crops as a strategic government and commercial imperative. Because many Catholic bishops in developing countries have been vehemently opposed to the controversial crops, the U.S. applied particular pressure to the Pope's advisors. Opportunities exist to press the issue with the Vatican, and in turn to influence a wide segment of the population in Europe and the developing world, says one cable. In a setback, the U.S. Army found that in its closest ally on genetically modified crops, Cardinal Renato Martino, head of the Pontifical Council for Justice, had withdrawn his support for the U.S. In addition, the cables show U.S. diplomats working directly for GM, genetically modified crop companies, such as Monsanto. It also emerges that Spain and the U.S. have worked together to persuade the EU not to strengthen biotechnology laws. Not only did the Spanish government ask the U.S. to keep pressure on Brussels, but the U.S. knew in advance how Spain would vote, even before the Spanish Biotech Commission had reported its findings. Interesting. Let's not rip out the front page. Speaking of ripping out the front page, that's news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Speaking of ripping out the front page, one has to ask. Now, I think, if you followed yesterday's events regarding the shootings in Arizona, you're aware that the leader, the world leader, in misreporting the event, that is to say, in scooping the world, in reporting that Representative Giffords had been killed, was none other than National Public Radio. In an unrelated development, NPR President Vivian Schiller is not taking her bonus this year. Well, she's not getting it, so she can't take it. Probably something to do with the Juan Williams matter. But, and not picking on NPR. Well, yeah, picking on NPR. Why not? But not singling out NPR, because several agencies also misreported the nature of that event. You know, big news does happen on Saturdays, ladies and gentlemen. Princess Diana died on a Saturday, just to name one. This event in Tucson over this weekend. Does the spate of misreporting of the Tucson event point up the fact that in the current economic environment for news organizations, Saturdays they tend to be undermanned and underwomaned, just shorthanded? Does that have anything to do with it? Just asking. And now, trumpeters have to inhale, of course. News of the Olympic Movement. The British Meteorology Office, called the Met Office by them, is predicting that a major solar storm may hit during the summer of 2012, disrupting the Olympic Games. Does Dick Ebersol know? A warning was given to the Commons Science and Technology Committee by the Met Office, detailing the possibility of a freak solar storm hitting London at exactly the same time the city is hosting the Olympic Games. Should this occur, the national grid would be damaged, planes would be diverted, and the financial sector rendered inactive as communication satellites would be crippled. According to the weatherman, solar events follow an 11-year maximum cycle, with dramatic and extreme space weather occurring at the high point of the cycle due around 2012. Hence the possibility of wrecking the Olympics. Scientists have suggested the present solar activity cycle is projected to be the most violent in living memory. I say give the sun the gold. The worst effect would be on the global monetary systems. Oh, that's right. That's okay. They've taken enough hits. They can survive anything. Relying, of course, on immediate satellite communication, with at least 30 satellites permanently damaged by a major solar event. The Carrington event in 1859, which hit North America, is the most powerful solar storm on record, and it's credited with knocking out all telegraph systems across North America. With modern life dependent on communications technology and electrically powered equipment, should a similar storm hit next year, The results are incalculable. I give it a 10. News of the Olympic movement. The Olympics. It's a movement, and everybody needs one every day. Yeah. Thank you, John Williams, for that. And now, ladies and gentlemen, yes, it's our friend the Atom. Deadline Concord, New Hampshire, the new New Hampshire Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management has issued the 2011 Emergency Public Information Calendars for residents and businesses who live near the two nuclear plants in New Hampshire, Seabrook and Vermont Yankee. Calendars, like they do it every year because it's so safe. Calendars contain important information that would be needed in the event of a nuclear plant accident. Why would they? You couldn't possibly. There wouldn't. This includes sheltering information, evacuation information, and routes and instructions on how people can protect themselves, their families, and pets in an emergency. We strongly encourage people to review this information and keep it available in case of an emergency, says Christopher Pope, Director of Homeland Security in New Hampshire. Why would Dateline Niskayuna, just trying to figure out where Niskayuna is, ladies and gentlemen. No way of knowing. But it's in the United States. Oh, it's near Albany. Hello, Albany. Albany. The federal government has hit the private company in charge of the cleanup of radiation-tainted buildings at Knowles Atomic Power Labs in Niskayuna with an almost $2 million penalty because of poor performance that caused radiation leaks into the air and the Mohawk River. The Department of Energy took that action against URS, which has been running the cleanup for about 2 years as part of a $70 million contract to demolish two Cold War-era research buildings. The penalty would come out of their potential $7.5 million maximum bonus, a cost-plus contract. Withholding part of such bonuses is one tool the Department of Energy uses to hold its contractors accountable for poor performance, said the spokesman. Demolition work is halted at the site while DOE considers a corrective action plan. Work at the site has been halted since November 19th. Project to remove the contaminated buildings which were used in atomic weapons research. The buildings have been closed since 1953, ladies and gentlemen. Just standing there, safely. Really? The partly demolished H2 building, where researchers developed a process known as Purex, not related to the bleach or the detergent, to extract weapons-grade plutonium and uranium, is now covered with tarps to prevent further contamination from escaping. Though you know how strong the tarps are and impenetrable. Nothing could get through a tarp. No molecules or atoms could get through a tarp. What, are you kidding me? That's tarp strength, tarp. That's tarpitude. Last week, a DOE investigation found that workers for a private contractor on the cleanup felt pressed by bosses to ignore safety issues and get work done faster in order to meet a September 2011 deadline linked to stimulus funding. Well, that's a good reason. Here's good news, ladies and gentlemen. DOE and the State Department of Environmental Conservation, which investigated a related spill last October of radioactive water that drained from the cleanup site into the Mohawk, have both insisted the contamination poses no threat to public health. I don't think any spill of radioactive water into a navigable waterway can possibly pose a threat to public health, given the consistency of these statements. I think you could dump it all in. No threat. The company was pushing to finish work 3 months earlier than first planned as part of an extra $33 million in federal stimulus funding. The federal report said workers faced, quote, an atmosphere of fear, unquote, to remain silent over concerns work was not being done safely. Hey, there's money involved. It is a good excuse. You're right. Three of the actuators for Vermont Yankees' four safety relief valves were found to be leaking during last April's outage, causing two of the valves to be considered inoperable, according to a licensee event report submitted to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission last month. Yankee engineers concluded there was firm evidence the condition may have existed for a period of time greater than allowed by the technical specifications. The relief valves provide protection for the plant's reactor coolant system. And you know, that's not important. It just keeps the thing from overheating. That's all. But it's, you know, clean, safe, clean. The purpose is to relieve pressure during events in which the reactor is shut down suddenly while high pressure remains. The depressurization function is important because it is designed to prevent damage to the system and to allow the injection of coolant water into the reactor vessel following an accident. But, of course, those don't ever... During the April outage, Yankee engineers tested the valves and identified leakage involving the nitrogen gas-powered actuators that can be used to open the valves. This is troubling, said one investigator, because the HPCI, whatever that is, sorry, had a pinhole leak in a one-inch drain line that was discovered in December 2010. Even though the hole was later fixed, the problem occurred during a time when the safety valves were leaking. The multiple components that failed are like the relief valve on top of a pressure cooker. However, you'll be reassured, ladies and gentlemen, to know, according to the manager of communications for the Yankee nuclear power plant, Larry Smith, the event did not pose a threat to public health or safety. Yeah, I believe him. Because he's paid to say that. Clean, safe. Too cheap to meter. Our friend the Atom. Goodbye, Addie.
Goodbye.
Put them all behind, and it was you, woman, right.
This is Le Show from New Orleans. Ladies and gentlemen, the individuals continue to leave the Obama administration. Presidential spokesperson Robert Gibbs announced his departure, his impending departure this week. He's been a jocular guy to have around. But I'm sure spokespersoning will go on regardless, jocular or not. Now, news of AFPAC. The number of Afghan police killed during 2010 fell about 7%. The government said this week, despite violence spreading across the country as the war entered its 10th year. But it's Afghanistan. They have long wars. Foreign military and civilian casualties are at record levels, despite the presence, or because of the presence, of 150,000 NATO-led troops. 2010 is the bloodiest year on record since the Taliban were ousted by the U.S.-backed forces in late 2001. But that's a good thing, isn't it? Ministry of the Interior spokesman Zamari Basahari said 2,447 Afghan police were wounded, 5,225 insurgents were killed. He said the government did not have a toll of insurgent casualties for 2009. They were too busy not collecting them. There was a total of 6,700 security incidents last year, such as ambushes, roadside bombings, suicide bombings, and rocket attacks. The Taliban, his agency reports, are at their strongest since they were ousted in 2001. The insurgency has spread out of its traditional strongholds in the south and east over the past 2 years into once peaceful areas of the north and west. The north is a deadly new front in the war. Was that in Obama's briefing? I'm not sure. The Interior Ministry said more than 2,000 civilians were killed and 3,500 wounded. Again, it did not have a toll for the previous year. The Defense Ministry said 821 Afghan soldiers were killed last year. It did not also have a toll available for the previous year. What were you guys doing in 2009? Clearly not collecting death statistics. The spokesman for the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force, ISAF, said the high number of casualties among Afghan security forces is a testament to their sacrifice, to their efforts, to their commitment. He also noted the high number of civilian casualties. Didn't say what that was a testament to their existence. The spokesperson said the surge in number of foreign troops fighting in Afghanistan had led to an expected upturn in violence, but obviously this is a necessary state. It's going to get worse. A necessary step, he says, a necessary phase in the overall strategy. Before it gets better, unfortunately, it has to get worse, he said. That's a quote from the NATO spokesperson. Of course, it could also get worse after it gets worse. Just because it gets worse doesn't mean it's going to get better. It could get still worse. Couldn't it, sir? Sir? Oh, he's off, not counting bodies. And they'd line Kabul. Afghan President Karzai's chief spokesman said, now, this week, that he has resigned, dealing another blow to the administration in Kabul. Waheed Omer, who's held the job since way back early last year, said the move was, quote, my personal decision and not political, unquote, dismissing suggestions he'd been pressured to quit. Karzai, the president, has been described as paranoid and weak by U.S. Ambassador Carl Eikenberry, according to some leaked WikiLeaks cables. Karzai hit back at the reports by accusing the Western media of regularly portraying him in a negative light. Afghan's media has prospered since the invasion, making the job of the government spokesman increasingly important. There are now more than 24 privately run television channels, plus dozens of radio stations and hundreds of newspapers in Afghanistan. So I guess that means they're in need of some reality programming. Or at least some talk shows.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where Juan Williams is welcome anytime.
From the newly refurbished presidential palace, we put the down in downtown Kabul. I'm Walid.
And I'm Hamid. We're Trip and Trap, the Carpet Brothers. Welcome to Karzai Talk.
Today's show is made possible by the fact that my brother hasn't been killed yet.
Hey, it's still mid-morning. The day is young. No, it's another freezing winter day here in Kabul. Bad for the joints.
Good for the hypodermics.
My brother has a little puppy business on the side.
Very big side.
Maybe bigger than the front.
You should know.
But this was a good week.
Not because no bombs or explosions here.
No.
So, why was it a good week?
More bombs and explosions in Pakistan.
Yes, they do have a border problem.
No, they do indeed.
What's the problem again?
No border. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hey guys, it's Robert Gibb.
Oh. This is our regular caller all the way from Washington, D.C.
Yes, usually, though, he calls us off the air.
That's right, but I'm just about to be a free man, and I thought I'd call it and share the good news.
You're getting divorced.
No, of course not. I'm leaving the White House.
Ooh, you're leaving the seat of power.
That's a good idea, my brother. Mm. You should look into it.
And where do you get your protection from?
Oh, the same warlords I do now.
So, Bob Gibbs, congratulations on your freedom. But you know, we just lost our spokesperson here in what I like to call the real estate capital of the world.
Wait, I thought it was New York.
That depends on what you want to do with your real estate. Mm. They're the world capital of building on it. Mm. We're the world capital of blowing it up.
I guess my brother's offering you a job.
I guess my brother's a little slow.
Well, that's a very surprising offer, Mr. President. I'd say it was a generous offer, but of course you didn't mention any terms.
Well, what I can say is that the last guy only left because he wanted more time to spend with a family.
Mm-hmm. His family?
Any family. And no, we're not offering you a family. No.
Well, look, I've been in a situation where I'm representing a president who's been battling against the letdown from very high expectations.
Oh, you wouldn't have that problem here. My brother once thought it would be a good idea to hire Geraldo Rivera as his spokesman.
Well, he did spend a lot of time over there.
Yes, it's true, but mainly he admired the mustache.
Well, yeah, it certainly could be a power stash. Mm-hmm. Well, look, guys, love the show. Maybe I'll call in again in my new civilian capacity.
And maybe next time my older brother can give you some tips preparing your resume.
My younger brother doesn't have a resume, just a rap sheet. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hi, guys. It's Steve Kipnis of the Morris office. I happen to represent John Stossel.
Hi.
Very fine broadcaster, yes. Currently with Fox News, but I couldn't help overhearing, or hearing at least, you're talking about wanting a spokesperson with a power mustache, and I just wanted to throw John's hat into the ring on that.
He's got a mustache on his hat?
No.
Well, they couldn't throw his head in the ring.
No.
Steve,
yeah.
Thanks for a very good idea.
Well,
we could make several more bad jokes about it if we weren't out of time.
But we are, so we won't. Legal services for Karzai Talk are provided by Ketchum and Newcomb.
Security services provided by three guys with guns. That's not the name of the company, that's just who they are.
Join my big brother, Hamid, and me, Walid, next week for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR. Afghanistan Public Radio.
43. Dad was a captain in the army, fighting the Germans in Sicily. My poor little mama didn't know a soul in L.A. Went down to the Union Station, made our getaway. Got on the Dixie Fly, bound for New Orleans. Across the state of Texas to the land of dreams. On the Dixie Fly. From a flask in the backseat, trying to do like the Gentiles do. Christ, they want to be Gentiles too. Who wouldn't down there, wouldn't you? An American Christian got down on the Dixie Fly, bound for New Orleans.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Facebook apologized this week for disabling the account of a photographer who posted pictures the company initially deemed inappropriate, including shots of a friend and her newborn moments after birth that partially showed her friend's breasts, but not her nipples. Facebook wrote an email to Laura Eckert of Shelbyville, Iowa, that it restored her account and its decision to deactivate it was in error. Eckert's photography business specializes in pictures of pregnant women and the first moments of a baby's life. She uses Facebook to communicate with clients and highlight her work. Just an example, ladies and gentlemen, of a new philosophy I've adopted called Don't Trust the Cloud. Dateline Uppsala, Sweden. A Swedish politician apologized to anyone who felt insulted by his suggestion of taxing the obese. Stefan Hanna, an Uppsala counselor, apologized on his blog this week for earlier suggesting the overweight should pay higher taxes because they put greater strain on the country's social services. He wrote he wanted to apologize to those who feel attacked by interpretations of my post. I've always been clear, I believe all people have equal value. he wrote. Some ESPN apologies, ladies and gentlemen. ESPN is apologizing for inappropriate on-air behavior by anchors Hannah Storm and Josh Elliott and NFL insider Adam Schefter, in which they appeared to celebrate the firing of Cleveland Browns coach Eric Mangini. The incident happened on SportsCenter as Schefter discussed which coaches were on the hot seat. He got a text or an email announcing that Mangini had been relieved of his duties by the Browns. The ESPN personalities laughed. Storm and Schefter high-fived. Their actions were inappropriate, and they immediately recognized this and acknowledged it on air, says ESPN spokesperson. ESPN apologizes for the incident. There'll be more of that. Yes, right here, as a matter of fact. Veteran ESPN broadcaster Ron Franklin apologized earlier this week after he was pulled from the air before Saturday's Fiesta Bowl for comments he made towards ESPN sideline reporter Janine Edwards. In a statement, Franklin said, "I said some things I shouldn't have, and I'm sorry. I deserve to be taken off the Fiesta Bowl." Franklin and Edwards had a spat before Friday's Chick-fil-A Bowl in a pregame production meeting when the conversation turned to the subject of Gilmore's wife, Marie, being elected mayor of Alameda, California. Edwards tried to join in but said she was shut down by Franklin. "Listen to me, sweet baby. Let me tell you something," Franklin is said to have told her. Edwards then said she told him not to speak to her like that, to which he responded, "Okay then, listen to me, a-hole." A colleague reported Franklin's comments to ESPN management, who attempted to pull him from the Chick-fil-A Bowl broadcast, but it was too late to find a replacement. He was then pulled from the Fiesta Bowl. Yes, there's a Chick-fil-A Bowl. Management of a West Hollywood nightclub apologized to the city Friday after about 60 angry customers threw rocks and bottles at L.A. County Sheriff's deputies when a punk rock concert was stopped early. Apology appeared on the Key Club's website, alluding to the unfortunate events that occurred during a concert featuring the band's Youth Brigade and TSOL. Speaking of music, Welsh singer Charlotte Church apologized this week for comments she made about Queen Elizabeth II and said she'd been foolish to make such flippant remarks. She had claimed in a magazine interview that the Queen has no idea what is going on and that she never recognized Church despite meeting her repeatedly. "I'm deeply sorry if my comments about Her Majesty the Queen caused offense," she said. "I'm honored to have met her and have an enormous amount of respect for her and what she does. After seeing those words in print, I realized how foolish I was to make such flippant remarks to a journalist. I find it difficult to remember even making them. My only defense is I never expected a respected publication," it was Esquire, "to sensationalize my words out of context like this," she said. Yeah, that's a good defense. Magazines never sensationalized. Britain's Oxford University Press has offered a formal apology to the Islamic Republic of Iran for distorting the historical name of the Persian Gulf in one of its recent publications. In its Bright Star Pupils Book 4, the Oxford University Press mistakenly referred to the Gulf as Arabian, for which it has extended a formal apology after Iran's embassy in London strongly protested the misnomer. The Lexington, Kentucky VA Medical Center issued a statement apologizing after 6 patients underwent cataract surgery with a surgical tool that was not properly sterilized. Senator Maria Cantwell, Democrat of Washington, has apologized for sending a letter to a fallen soldier's mother that misnamed him in its last paragraph. Microsoft has apologized but not explained why nearly 20,000 Hotmail accounts were mysteriously emptied of their contents during the Christmas holiday. And those, ladies and gentlemen, are the apologies of the week. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. It has not been confirmed yet, but it has been reported by Entertainment Weekly that Sarah Palin's Alaska, the former Alaska governor's reality show, will not be renewed for a second season, raising the question whether reality television was for Sarah Palin just another bridge to nowhere.
When I'm asleep, you're in every dream, but can you be as grand as you seem? You span the miles. Why, I really don't know. You promise a journey, but where do you go?
Bridge to nowhere.
I'm under your spell. If you were a tunnel, in your walls I would dwell. Set me free. Oh, how I wonder how you feel about me. First, I loved you. I thought you could help. Cut short my commute to the moose and the elk. But you became a notorious curse. My dreams are driving right into reverse. You're under my skin. When my world is at stake, forsaking you is no sin. Just leave me alone. We'll keep the money. Honey, you're on your own. To the bridge.
Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of Alaska, a new study discovers climate change is causing wildfires to burn more fiercely, pumping more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere than previously thought. In News of the Warm, climate change is causing wildfires to burn more fiercely, pumping more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, according to a new study published in Nature Geosciences. This is the first study to reveal that fires in the Alaskan interior have become more severe in the past 10 years and have released much more carbon into the atmosphere than was stored by the region's forests over the same period. These findings are worrisome, says University of Guelph Professor Merit Turetsky, because about half of the world's soil carbon is locked in northern permafrost and peatland soils. This is carbon that has accumulated in ecosystems a little bit at a time for thousands of years, but is being released very rapidly through increased burning, he says. The results of the study are important for countries currently meeting this year for climate talks. Essentially, this could represent a runaway climate change scenario in which warming is leading to larger and more intense fires, releasing more greenhouse gases and resulting in more warming. The cycle can be broken for a number of reasons, but likely not without dramatic changes to the boreal forest as we currently know it. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over the same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like radioactive releases into navigable waterways, causing no public health menace, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to the ever more popular Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans. Playlist, mailing address for this broadcast, go to harryshearer.com. This program is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.